Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mundo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
Oh, stick to my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
That's right, it's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to, the show that's going to tell you the truth about how corporate power is turning the American dream into the impossible dream for the working person, the show that rattles the left-wing limousine liberals who sit on their high horses while the working class fights their battles for them, and the show that loves to point out how the so-called professional media is selling us down the river by not reporting the news. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Avecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here.
Hey, Joe, what do you know?
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about this show. But first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
Okay, and I want to thank all my fans listening in at the White Rose Society, my good friend Ben Birch, hosting my archives there. Also, my friends at rantradio.com. Tuning in on Mondays and Thursdays, my friends at WNYmedia.net out of upstate New York, and everyone listening in from the blog or from their iPods.
Okay, I'm back with a more regular show. I hope none of you have missed me too much. And I'm sorry, of course, I had reasons to be delayed like I was, but I'm sorry it took so long to get a new show out. And I'm glad to be back. It's good to get back behind the mic and talk about something other than personal issues. As you know, I lost my wife not more than just a little more over 3 weeks ago. It doesn't seem like only 3 weeks. It seems like it's been a lot longer, which is weird because I've been busy. You would think the time would go by faster. But it's been an interesting time. Everyone tells me I've been holding up really, really good. I just think I haven't had the nervous breakdown I'm due for yet. I've had a lot of things happen to me in the last couple of years. I did get some work, so to speak, a little under-the-table work, doing some help for a local Democrat running for office. I'm not going to say who. Again, you know, that's really – I don't want to say it. It's like none of your business, because that's really not the attitude or the emotion behind it. But it's really just not something that I like to talk about in specific, because, you know, it's something that I'm doing for a living and not really having to do with the politics of the day. But it was helping a local Democrat. I will say that. Someone running for Board of Education here in Atlanta, and I was just basically distributing flyers, and they're paying me money for it, which is good, and I need to work and I need to help. I got my friend Phyllis Huster, who was on the last show, and she was helping me out too. And the area that we were doing it in, now we had a lot of flyers to distribute. There were specific addresses. Let me get to that. Let me make it clear. I wasn't just putting a flyer on every single door. I'm not really sure why that is, but I was given a list of specific addresses, which I assume were people who had registered Democratic in the past or have donated money some way, shape, or form. But these are very specific addresses that I was told only to deliver to. And it sounds like it's not a really bad deal. You walk up and down the street and you put the flyer in. You can't put it in the mailbox. For those of you who are not aware of this, you're not allowed to put anything inside a mailbox unless you're a U.S. postman. That is the law. Because that's tampering with the mail, and that's a federal law. So, you know, you put it on where the flag is, or you slide it maybe on the side of it or something like that. You find a way to stick it in, or if you can go to the door, you stick it in the door. And, you know, my attitude is let's do it as unobtrusively as possible. I'm not there knocking on doors and talking to people. I'm just going to drop a flyer off and leave. And it sounds easy enough, just walk down and drop them off at the mailbox. Right? But the neighborhood that I'm delivering this stuff to, that I'm dropping these flyers off to, is, first of all, it's one of the richest areas of town. Million-dollar homes, people who have seven-figure salaries or at least high six-figure salaries, you know, one of the some beautiful, beautiful houses. Don't get me wrong. Some really ugly ones, too, but some beautiful, beautiful houses. But the thing about it is, and I've had to deliver hundreds of flyers over the last 2 days, 3 days, and I think I can count on the fingers of one hand the number that actually had a mailbox on the street. If everybody had that, I would have had the district that I was supposed to get done. I would be three-quarters of the way through. As it is, I'm about halfway through. I've got to get this done on Sunday. With some help from Phyllis today, we got a lot of stuff done. But the thing about it is, it's just really, it makes the job a lot harder because I have to walk up some of these very long driveways just to put it up by the door. And sometimes you can't read the numbers, which is difficult enough. You don't want to leave it at the wrong address. A, it wastes flyers. B, there may be some, you know, some legalities that I doubt it, honestly, because I'm only dropping them off at the door. But the biggest problem is a lot of these houses are like on hills, and the mailboxes are at the door. You can't just put one in the mailbox at the street, just walking by, drop a flyer, go on to the next one. You can't do that. So it's basically making double or triple the amount of work I'm having to do, and especially walking all uphill. And the first couple of days were murder on me. Today wasn't too bad because I had Phyllis help me out, and I didn't have as much area to cover because Phyllis was covering the other part of it for me. But it was murder on me because the area is pretty hilly anyway, so you're going up and down and up and down a lot. And then you have to climb up these stairs. And after a while, I just said, screw it. When I saw a really big, long staircase, I'm like, my legs can't handle this anymore. And I dropped it off somewhere up in the front, not in the mailbox or not by the mailbox because they didn't have one, but somewhere where it could be seen, hopefully. And I wanted to deliver to every address, and I did my best. Some places I simply couldn't get into because they were in secure condominiums or apartment complexes where you're not just allowed, for good reason, to just wander around in there and drop off flyers. And that's why these people pay all this money, right? But I was speaking with Phyllis about this afterwards, and she'll probably be mad at me for talking about it without her being in here because this is one of the things we talked about. And it's something I've noticed, too, in my life. And she was talking about how sterile some of the furniture is, you know, in some of these houses. And I'm really, you know, I really didn't look into the houses and all that. I wasn't doing that. I didn't want to bother anybody. I wanted to be as intrusive as possible. There was one place where they had some nasty dogs in the yard, so I just left it up by the front gate there. And I met a few kitties, and I petted a few kitties. Some very nice. One a little crazy. Was running around looking at me, and then just running around clawing trees, and maybe looked like it was on catnip or something. But at any rate, one of the things I have noticed is that rich people may have more money and live in better places, but they really don't seem to know how to live life, how to enjoy their lives. Poor people have it all over rich people when it comes to that. And maybe we always have money problems or we're always worried about, you know, whether we could pay the rent. And sometimes it gets really, really nasty, like it got with Kathy and I when we got evicted a couple years ago when we first met Phyllis. But poor people, I've noticed, tend to live better. They know where better food is. For example, one of the places I went to, there was a little mall in the area there in one of the business centers. And they had a few of the typical places. But I went to a little Chinese place that had some sushi there. And it wasn't expensive stuff. But, you know, since they paid me cash money for this, I had enough money to get myself a nice lunch. And I had some sesame chicken and I had a California roll. And it was crap. It was absolute crap. I paid, about $7.50? No, it was like $9-something. Because it was a sushi. You know, the sushi was more. Otherwise, it would have been like $6-something. But, you know, it was not very good. And I'm thinking to myself, this is really awful. And I remember when Phyllis was living up in the Smyrna area, which is a suburb of Atlanta, north and west, out in Cobb County. Very right-wing, very rich, very conservative. She had a little Chinese place she went to there. And the food was not good. She ordered some dumplings, and I love dumplings. I love Chinese-style dumplings. And she ordered some, and I said, this is not real good. And there's a little place not far from where I live. Called Hong Kong New York style Chinese food. I don't understand what the difference is between New York style Chinese food. I don't know. All I know is this place has some of the best damn Chinese food I've ever had in my life. They are really, really, really good. And I don't want to say they're pricey, but they're not inexpensive. You know, you can easily find yourself spending $9, $10, $12 on a meal. But you know what? You get a lot for your money. You really do, and the food is outstanding. And this is in a very poor neighborhood, and a little strip mall that the supermarket that I usually shop in is located at. A little Kroger in there. And there's also a thrift store in there. It's really nice. I got a lot of great stuff. That's where I think I mentioned a time ago, I mentioned a leather jacket that I had purchased for like $5 because I got it half price. And you know, it's just a really, really nice little shopping center. And I go there all the time. And it's a very poor neighborhood right across the street and actually across two streets, Kitty Corner as they call it. There used to be the Avondale Mall, which used to be a fairly bustling mall, which is now defunct. Is that the right word? It's out of business, and it's been out of business for quite some time because, quite frankly, people can't afford to be shopping at malls in that area anymore. But the shopping center still does good business. It's got the supermarket there, and there's a dollar store, and there's a place called Maxway, which is kind of like a dollar store. You know, and it's got some interesting stuff in it. But the thing about it is, you know, you look at how rich people are. One of the things Phyllis talked about with the furniture was that the furniture doesn't seem to be very comfortable. It looks real nice, but it's not very comfortable. And, you know, and I'm the type of person, I like to have nice things. You know, I mean, I don't like to have rickety old crappy stuff. No, I like to have nice things, but when I'm looking for nice, I'm looking for function more than style. I'm looking for something that's going to do the job that I need rather than how cool does this look, how neat does this look. A lot of the stuff that I have was either given to me as a gift or stuff that I've wrangled together, found on sale. My computer monitor, for example. This is a very nice Sony monitor. A beautiful Sony monitor. Normally cost about $400. I paid $99 for this at a Best Buy because it was the display model. This is a very big screen, very high definition. Really, really nice monitor, and I'm very happy with it. Haven't had problem one with it since I got it. And Sony, of course, is a brand name you can trust. And again, normally a $400 thing, I got it for $100. That's worthwhile. I have a little scanner here that I bought on sale at an Office Max or an Office Depot or someplace like that, maybe 3 years ago. And the main reason I bought it is, number one, it was like I think $49.99 because it was an old model they were getting rid of. And it could scan negatives, which are important to me because I have a lot of negatives. When I had my good camera, which got stolen, I won't say by whom, but when I had my good camera, I would take thousands and thousands of pictures. I mean, literally, pictures of Japan, pictures of Italy, pictures of Germany, pictures of Montana, places that I've been, you know. And I really like to scan these pictures in. And unfortunately, you know, I'm such an idiot when I take these pictures. I don't really take pictures of friends and family. They're mostly just pictures of the local area. And I'll take a lot of them. I'll take maybe 10 or 20 pictures, and I'll hopefully get one or two good ones out of that. But the thing about it is, even the camera that I had, I paid like $300 for the camera. No, it wasn't that much. It was about $150, I think. I don't remember. I bought it back in 85, 86, back when I was in Japan. But I bought it because it did the things that I wanted to do. And this scanner is very inexpensive, and it does what I want it to do. It's not the best scanner out there. It's not the slimmest. It takes up a little bit more space. But you know what? It's a damn good scanner. It's a damn good scanner. I buy – a lot of the furniture I have is that self-assembly stuff by O'Sullivan Company, which, again, it's kind of cheesy stuff. But you know what? If you put it together properly, and maybe sometimes you have to throw a couple of braces here and there, it's really nice – quality stuff. Not quality. That's not the right word. It's really just nice, durable, for the most part, sturdy, functional. And I think when people get a lot of money, they'll throw that functional away. Or if people are used to just having a lot of money, they'll throw that whole idea of functional away and just get something that looks good. Like, for example, you know, people who buy Corvette, they'll spend $80,000, $90,000 on a Corvette, or however much they cost. A very, very expensive car because they want, you know, oh, I'm driving a Corvette. But you know what? I can get my ass from A to B in a Hyundai. And I like having a nice car. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to have a junker. I don't want to have a car that's leaking gas and leaking, you know, fumes all over the place. I really don't want that. I want a car that works. I want something that works well. And if I get that, then I'm happy with it. And, you know, my old car, Rusty, which I name everything. Pretty much. And I renamed my car Rusty. My car before that the black Hyundai I called Melko the Mighty after Sauron's boss, basically, in the old Silmarillion. But, you know, I name everything. And I liked Rusty. Rusty, I named Rusty because she was a rusty car. Actually, her full name was Rusty Warren because she kind of reminded me of the old singer Rusty Warren. You know, kind of not great looking on the outside, but, man, she had it on the inside. And Rusty was a good car when I got it, and it was my fault. I didn't pay enough attention to oil levels that, you know, the engine started to overheat, unfortunately, and then the engine died enough on it that I had to basically have it towed, which, you know, may or may not have been my fault that much because it may have been happening anyway. It was like a 20-year-old car. But a lot of the stuff I have is very old. I have some very nice furniture that I bought, a nice dresser that's cherry wood, but I got it at like a yard sale. And I think I paid $175, and I got a big dresser. And what is it? It got with the cabinet with the drawers inside it. I forget what that's called. And I got two little nightstands, $175. So to me, it was a worthwhile purchase. The chair I'm sitting on, whose name is Salvatore, by the way. And when I bought a computer chair for Kathy, I named it Sophia. And the Salvatore, Sophia was the old lady, Estelle Getty, played the grandmother on Golden Girls. And Salvatore was her husband. So Salvatore is a fairly recent name for mine because I only just got Sophia a little while ago. But Salvatore I bought in like 88, 89, I guess. I was up in Montana. And I desperately need to have Salvatore reupholstered because it's an old chair. And it was kind of old when I got it. And it's a little ratty. But you know what? I still like it. It's still very comfortable. My ass cheeks fit in there absolutely perfectly. It is really in tune with my butt, and I just do need to get it refilled, but I want to keep it because it's got a nice metal construction. I mean, I like some of the newer chairs, but they always seem to be ready to fall apart in a minute, and this one is not going to fall apart. I just need to get, you know, the reupholstering done, and then I'll be very, very happy. So, but, and I've noticed a few things about rich people, and I've looked at some of the things that they have, and I wonder why they have them, and it's all, you know, very, very expensive stuff. Why do people spend so much money on certain things? I don't know. Maybe they feel like they've got it. Maybe if I ever had that kind of money, maybe I would think that, you know, I would get stuff like that. But who knows? Phyllis likes to talk about that. She's, you know, she likes going to thrift stores now, and she used to make a lot of money. She used to make six-figure salaries. And she said that she used to go and she would spend $30 or $40 on a polo shirt. Now she's happy to go to a thrift store and spend $4 or $5 on a used polo shirt. And you know, I get some really good deals at thrift stores. I got me like two or three very nice suits. And you know, and I'm going to say this because a lot of people think you're not a real man if you do stuff like that. But you know, stuff like this. But you know what? Screw that. This is what I do. My pants, whenever I buy a pair of pants, because I'm a hefty guy and I'm short. I'm about 5'2 and I weigh about 200 pounds. Okay, and so I'm a big guy, so which means I've got a big waist and short legs, which means every pair of pants I have to have altered. And so whatever I pay for the pants, I have to pay another $7 to $10, depending on where I go to get them hemmed. So I thought, screw this. I got myself a sewing machine for $20 at a thrift store. Actually, my son Christopher helped me pay for it. I felt embarrassed about that, but I really needed the sewing machine. Hopefully, I'll get a new sewing machine one of these days. And I have my own pants. It's not that difficult. I mean, I'm not doing anything fancy. I'm not making costumes, you know, or anything like that. I'm just hemming pants. And I'll do that for myself because it'll save me $10. And it doesn't take me but 10, 15 minutes to do it. You just measure it out, you fold it up, and you sew it. That's it. The sewing machine takes 10, 15 minutes to do it. It's not that bad. It's worth it. It's worth it. And that means I can go to the thrift store and buy a pair of pants that look nice. Buy a suit jacket that looks nice, find one that fits, and even maybe adjust the sleeves if I can. I haven't tried to do that yet, but we'll see. But the point is, if I was rich, if I had a lot of money to kind of deal, would I be going out and spending $30 or $40 on a brand new polo shirt or something like that, that I'm always only going to wear a few times? In some women's cases, I always wonder how they can spend hundreds or, in celebrities' cases, thousands of dollars for a dress and only wear it once. And to me, that's just not practical. One of the reasons I love Kathy was because she was like that, too. She didn't require all of that. You know, she didn't require, like, jewelry, all of that fancy stuff that some women, you know, need, you know, supposedly to show them that you love them and stuff like that. I think that's all her shit. to be perfectly honest. I would if I had the money. I mean, I don't mind splurging. I certainly was nice to Kathy as far as that was concerned, and as nice as I could be. Rather than expensive jewelry or stuff like that, I would always take her nice places to eat, show her some of the nicer things in life. It's important to do that from time to time. Don't get me wrong. I'm not bitching about people who are rich in the sense that just having money makes them, you know, in some way inferior. Although they would say that having money makes them superior, but that's another story. But I think a lot of times rich people just get the wrong idea about stuff. The wrong idea. Anyway, enough rambling on that. We're going to hear from our friends at BuzzFlash, and then we'll be back for more. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Tucker Joe Radio Show.
Back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Our apologies if you just ate lunch, but sometimes we feel like a dog that can't keep from returning to its own vomit. Oh, we could have picked the interminably creepy James Dobson as our GOP Hypocrite of the Week, or the White House's bad will ambassador, Karen Hughes, or the irredeemably disingenuous White House Iraq Working Group honorary member, Judith Miller. But like that mutt, we keep returning to the top dog hypocrite, George W. Bush. Now, here's a guy who kept saying that the White House didn't condone torture and that any abuse of Muslim prisoners that occurred was due to a, quote, few bad apples, unquote. There were just a few things wrong with this PR spin. For one thing, it was a lie. There's even the proof in the form of a memo by then White House counsel Alberto Gonzalez laying out the legal justifications for torture. Two, despite confirmation that senior Pentagon and White House officials were aware of torture, they were virtually all promoted, while the low-level stiffs took the rap. Hey, Gonzalez got to be America's Attorney General. Then last week, the normally Stepford Republicans in the Senate revolted and passed a bill that included a ban on torture. Surprisingly, there were only 9 pro-torture Republican votes. Is that progress or what? And what did Bush threaten to do? Why, to veto the entire bill because it prohibited the kind of torture that George claimed the administration didn't engage in. Okay, so if we understand Bush's policy, it's something like this. We don't torture people, but you better not keep us from torturing people because we do. Whoa! That's some jaw-dropping hypocrisy. Bush did have a macabre joy in setting the record for executing people when he was governor of Texas, so you can kind of understand why torture would hold a special spot in his heart. But if torture is your official policy as a president, then stand up like a man and admit it. Otherwise, you're just the BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Yet again. Remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com? So many Republican hypocrites. Oh, man. So little time. Catch up with you soon.
I don't want that. It tastes fishy.
Try it, eh? Salty doesn't taste fishy.
I say it does taste fishy.
I'm telling you, it doesn't. Try it.
Yes, it does, then there won't.
I said try it.
It doesn't taste fishy. I wonder why.
It's a veal cutlet, you dumb shit.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And again, I want to thank everybody listening in on rantradio.com, and especially at the whiterosesociety.org. And I'm hopeful Ben Birch gets his network together as soon as he can, because it's a really, really good thing. He's got Bob Kincaid with him. And I really must remember to call Bob Kincaid and talk to him on his show. He's a really, really nice guy. He sent me some condolences, and I think he sent me a donation, too, after Kathy passed away, which is very, very nice of him, considering that he's never met me. But I am told that he does listen to my show and likes my show a lot. So I'm very happy for that. I actually got an email. By the way, before I continue, let me say that was Carol Burnett and Harvey Korman in that little outtake bit there from the old Carol Burnett show. And I know I'm aging myself by doing that. Carol Burnett had a reputation for being kind of a family person, but in private, like most people or like most celebrities, you know, they had their raunchy side to them. But that was a real famous ass call. It's a veal cutlet, you dumb shit. yeah, I'm a fucking dry humor son of a bitch. What can I tell you? I do want to... Again, want to thank everybody that offered their condolences and sent some money to help me out. I'm actually looking to do a much larger fundraiser in the not-too-distant future because, quite frankly, for the last year and a half or so, and for the last year mostly, especially since I was out of work, most of my life has been spent taking care of Catherine. Before she went into the hospital, she still kind of required attention. In fact, one of the reasons why I lost my job at Siemens was because I wound up taking a little bit more time off in order to keep an eye on her, because there were days when I just needed to make sure that she would be okay. I mean, she had so many different problems with the diabetes and digestive problems and just a lot of different things going on. And there were some days where I felt it would be best if I just come in and take care of her. She slept a lot in the last year or so of her life. She slept a lot, and I didn't think that was normal because she was sleeping like 13, 14 hours a day, but she had a lot of health problems. My point was that I wasn't looking for work as hard as I probably should have, but I was more concerned with her health. And, of course, once you get into the hospital, it was impossible to look for work, and I was really behind on the back rent. So I'm looking to raise a substantial amount of money, but not from you guys. Don't worry about it. You guys have done wonders. There are other people out there that we are looking at, people who have some big money and who understand what I've been going through, and hopefully we can get them to donate some money, because, you know, $20, $10 here and there for you guys is a lot in this day and age, and it's a really remarkable that I get so many people to help me out in that area. And some people sent, you know, as much as $100, but it's really not the amount that's important. What's important is just the very thought of it. I mean, these people, a lot of them, I never know who they were. I never met them in person. In fact, even Ben Bircher I've never met in person, but he's done a lot to help me out, both financially and through support and helping people, you know, donate money to me. So, and it's really, really nice that we can do that. But there are people with some big pockets who we're hoping to, you know, get to help me out a little bit, because what I want to do is get caught up on the back rent. And that's really it. We're about $6,000-$7,000 behind, and I'd like to get enough not only to pay the back rent off, but to pay a few months in advance, so that I don't have to worry about, you know, whether or not I can afford to pay the rent while I'm looking for work. It's not that my landlord is going to kick me out right away, mind you, but it's important for me to get this monkey off my back. Of all the other bills, you know, the only one I'm worried about is the phone bill, which I try to keep up. And I've got enough money to keep me going there for at least a couple of months. And like I said, I started this new thing, and it's really not – it's only a temporary thing. But, hey, it's a few dollars, and that always helps out. But my other bills, my old credits and stuff like that, you know, the new bankruptcy law went into effect last Monday or this – yeah, this past Monday. And my attitude to all of my creditors as far as that sort of concern is, fuck you. That's my attitude, because, you know, when I was working and I was keeping the bills going, that was great and that was wonderful. I don't want to say pressured, but it was made a lot easier for me to get a new car than it was to get a decent used car that I could have just paid off fairly easily. You know, a $3,000 or $4,000 used car, I would have been very, very happy with. I would have been able to pay that off in about 5 or 6 months, and I would have had a fairly decent car that wasn't going to go into the shop. But could they do that for me? No, but they can give me credit for a brand new car and then change it out later on and just increase my payments. They're more than happy for you to do that. I have that attitude about things, and some people think it's wrong or it's criminal or stuff like that, but you know what? If you're going to get me into this debt, if society is going to put people in a position that forced me into debt, or not force me, because that's not the right word, but where they make it easier for you to get into that kind of debt, and then don't do anything to help you get out of it in terms of, you know, helping you with decent wages and all that stuff, then my attitude towards the people who are come looking for money is fuck you. Because you know what? I still don't have any regular income. You're not getting a dime out of me. I don't own a damn thing that's worth selling. You know, I own some nice stuff. Like I talked about, I own some nice stuff. And I did splurge a little bit with some of the donation money, not on what I call frivolous things, but on things that are important to me. Like I bought a new bed. I needed a new box spring and a new mattress. I paid $400 for one, which sounds like it's pricey. But if you've ever gone out to like a major retailer to price mattresses, and you know how expensive they can be. I went to a thrift shop that was selling like a box spring and a mattress for like $150, but you know what? That didn't look very good at all. I wanted something a little bit more comfortable because I have been having trouble sleeping lately. But it's just important to me to get what I consider the major important stuff, and the rent is important. The rent is a biggie. But the other creditors, you can go fuck yourselves. Until I find steady work, and when I find steady work, then you call me and we can work something out, then that's fine. And that's fine. But until then, you know, you hold your damn horses. Because I've got more important things to worry about. Excuse me. Oh, that was bad. I don't have a cough button here. By the way, I bought something. In my never-ending quest to help improve the show as cheaply as possible, I went out and I purchased for myself a shock mount for the microphone. For those of you who don't know, and just so that I don't sound like I'm being like a radio snob or something like that, I didn't know what these things were called until just a few weeks ago when I was trying to find one. And I got it on eBay, and it's basically what it is a device that holds a microphone in place with rubber bands of some sort. And that's important because it keeps the microphone from – if you tap something, like if I tap the desk like this. So you can hear that. It's not a very loud sound. But if you can hear that scraping, you hear that? That's just a pen running against the desk. So any kind of touch like that, you're going to hear. I want a shock mount so that if I accidentally nick the desk or do this, you're not going to hear it very loudly. And it really hasn't quite worked out yet. I think I haven't quite figured it out. But the thing that holds the microphone in place is actually far too large for the microphone. I don't think it was made for the kind of microphone that I have. But I can improvise with it. That's the thing about it. And I'll always find a way to improvise, and I'll make it work if I have to. At any rate, what was I saying? God, there's been a lot of stuff in the news since I've been worried about personal affairs. Tom DeLay got indicted and got arrested. That was a big shock. He got arrested, although he's not in prison, actual prison. He did have to have a mugshot taken. Did you see that mugshot? You can go on, is it Atrios that has it? Or Daily Coast? Daily Coast has it. Go on Daily Coast. Let me take a look and double check on it. Daily Coast has got the picture. Yeah, there it is. Look at that smiling fucking face of his. That's a mugshot? You know? God, it looks like a campaign photo. And, you know, and I'm going to tell you something. I am going to continue to play the skeptic here. I am doing that partly because I find it difficult to believe that anything serious is going to happen to Mr. DeLay or to Mr. Cheney or to Mr. Bush or to Mr. Rove or any of the big players in there, simply because they're too powerful and they have too many powerful people in their pocket to help them out. But also just on principle, because I hear all this, oh, they're going to get it now talk that I hear on the community blogs and stuff like that. And that's fine. They're entitled to their opinion. But you know what? Show me the money in that sense. Show me where any serious change is actually happening. You know, and all this talk about, oh, the conservatives are up on Bush, you know, because of the Myers thing and the Supreme Court thing, and they don't like her because she's not conservative. You know what? What difference does it make so far? You know, they had the same stuff about Roberts, and guess what? Roberts is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court now, and he's a fairly young guy, so he's going to be in there for 30 or 40 years, people, with no way to get rid of him. You cannot impeach a Supreme Court justice. You know that, don't you? You're aware of this? They're in there until they retire or until they die. That is it. And it's quite possible that Bush is going to get a chance to nominate two or three others in there. And you know what? The Roberts one and the Myers one are less important than, say, a Ginsburg or a Souter, because those are the true left-wingers on the side, you know, among the justices. The ones that he's had to replace right now have been Rehnquist, who was a hardcore Republican, conservative type. And God, I forgot who the other one was. Sandra O'Connor, who kind of sort of was a swing vote, but who still, I mean, she voted for Bush and Bush versus Gore. Okay? She's the one that made that decision. When we joked that Bush won the 2000 election 5-4, she was a major factor in that. She was the vote number five. In fact, she was on record or overheard to be pissed off if she heard that when she heard that Gore was winning Florida. So she was an operative in that sense. But I'm just going to remain skeptical until I'm proven wrong. I want to make it clear that I want to be proven wrong on this. I don't want it to seem like I really don't care about what's going on. I just want everybody to know that I'm going to be skeptical. You want to show me what's going on, you show me the money. You want to prove to me that things are really changing for the better, you show me. In 1932, you could sense a sea change, and you knew that the Democrats were going to retake power. And now these guys have come back, and they're stronger than ever. They haven't yet accumulated the power to destroy Social Security yet, but give them enough time and opportunity, and they will do that, surely. There was a great article recently by Paul Krugman of the New York Times, and he was talking about how wages have basically have gone up maybe 2%, and in some cases actually a lot of it has gone down because of inflation, while corporate profits are going through the roof. And some of it is healthcare. Some of it is just plain damn stupid. I mean, I could sit here, I could spend hours and hours talking about all the different things. But, you know, we live in a country now where we don't have any sense of right and wrong. Right is how do we get as much money as we possibly can very quickly. And I was talking about rich people, and I was when you talk about corporations in this sense, you know, organizations that have money in just amounts that you just can't even imagine, and what they do with that money and how they use it to influence governments and policy and change the lives of people. There was an article about, you know, Krugman's article about how wages in this country have remained stagnant while the country itself has gotten richer. We're all getting poorer. We're not getting any of the breaks from that. You look at the way things are going across the globe, and they're not very good. I mean, the lowering of standards for American labor hurts Americans, yes, but it also, in the long run, hurts all the workers of the world. We need a global labor standard. We need a global minimum wage, and we have to prevent companies from moving to a different country for no reason other than the workforce is cheap. I don't have a problem with companies moving. I think that if General Motors, for example, wants to sell cars to Europe and to the Japanese, they should be able to move to Japan or move to Germany or move to France or move somewhere and build a plant there and provide jobs for French workers and Italian workers and German workers and Japanese workers and Vietnamese workers. There's no reason why they shouldn't be able to do that, because it's cheaper for them to produce it there and ship it to where it needs to go within those regions. That's perfectly fine with me. It's a legitimate business thing. But a GM moving to Mexico because the workers get paid $5 a week is not a reason for them to move. And with all the other companies doing that, that just leads to everything being screwed up for everybody. And what happens when the Mexicans start demanding a little bit more money? Or are they going to? The level of education down there, from what I understand, I can't quote from, you know, actual things, but from what I understand, the level of education there is not like what it is here. But we have problems here, too. Our healthcare system is a huge problem. What company was it? The auto manufacturer was going to have a plant in Alabama, but they changed their mind and they went to Canada instead, even though the Alabama group was offering them huge tax incentives. But those tax incentives were not going to be enough to offset the healthcare costs. These are real serious problems. These are real serious problems, and they're not getting solved. So when DeLay gets indicted and, you know, Fitzpatrick, is that his name? Fitzpatrick or Fitzsimmons, the guy who's leading the investigation into the Valerie Plame thing, when he finally lays down his charges, we'll see what happens. Someone pointed out that what the Republicans might be doing now is spreading rumors that things are going to be wild so that we get our expectations real high, and then it'll maybe only come down with one or two indictments. We'll see what happens. As always, I am taking a wait-and-see approach because I'm very, very skeptical that people this powerful are going to get taken down. It's very rare. Because when guys like that do get taken down, it takes a massive amount of effort to do so. And the last group we really had to do that for was the Nazi Party in Germany. So you'll forgive me if I look at it, oh, they're going to get it now, if I look at that and say, no, they're not. And in the meantime, your lives are getting worse. And where are the Democrats? Where are the Democrats? They're nowhere. They're nowhere. Governor Dean is still working to rebuild. My friend Phyllis is a little upset that he hasn't done a lot more. But the task that he has to do is very, very formidable. He was on, was it Stewart or Letterman? He was on Letterman the other day. And I didn't really care for what he had to say. I think he did very badly myself. But he's really not in a position right now to do anything major. He's still in the process of working through the party organization and restructuring. And that's going to take some time. Give him a few years and maybe things can get going quicker. Another part is that the Democrats still simply don't understand that you've got to throw some money at things. I've said it time and time again. There's no reason at all a guy like me has to sit there in poverty, or a guy like Ben Birch has to sit in poverty to try to accomplish things that need to be done. When there are people in the Democratic establishment who have big pockets, deep pockets, who can create a media infrastructure that we desperately, desperately need. Not so much to be cheerleaders for the left, but just to be good journalists and to tell the objective truth. We're not getting the objective truth from the so-called professional media. I mean, look at the whole Judith Miller thing. I mean, this is outrageous. Miller and Robert Parry of Consortium News .com. Very, very good website. And Parry writes some very, very good columns about that. And he talks about how journalists were starting to get pressured in the late 70s and early 80s. Instead of being skeptical reporters, which what they had to be, especially in the late 70s or in the early 70s around the Watergate stuff. But basically, when Reagan and other people started to threaten, and also the editors and publishers, not so much the local editors, but the higher up editors and the publishers started putting pressure on reporters to toe the party line, as opposed to being skeptical journalists, under the assumption that the country didn't need, you know, to have this dug into anymore. You know, that's when we get into trouble. That's how we get Iran-Contra. That's how we get the U.S. government supplying money and weapons to Iran, and using the money from that, to fund an illegal war in Nicaragua. That's how we get false claims of deadly weapons in Iraq by Judith Miller, who was relying on Ahmad Chalabi's words. And what is it? Miller said in a speech that she felt like her job was covering threats to the country. Of what threat was Iraq to us, directly or even indirectly? Yeah, they gave money to Palestinian terrorists, you know, to help suicide bombers. But that's a big Israeli thing. And yes, we helped the Israelis. But, you know, Saddam wasn't pointing nukes at us. And he wasn't going to point nukes at us. And any rational person would have seen that, well, yeah, he's an asshole and a scumbag. He is not an immediate threat to us. If we don't keep up sanctions and if we don't keep our eye on him, yeah, he could develop maybe in 10 or 20 years as a threat, but not to us directly, maybe to Israel. Maybe he might threaten to start another war again. But, you know, after that really nasty war between Iraq and Iran, I don't think they want to have anything to do with that. Now, the Iranians are very happy with the way things are going in Iraq right now, because the majority of the people in Iraq, or at least as far as the government officials are concerned, the Shiites and the Kurds would rather have some closer ties to Iraq. Well, maybe not the Kurds, because the Kurds want to be their own nation. Anyway, let's take a little break here, and then I'll get back and we'll talk about a few more things. And we'll be back. Talk to you. I'll talk to you in a second. Sam, play us out.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show will be right back.
Hi, kids. George Lowe, voice of TV's beloved Space Ghost. You are barking a happy tune with my close personal friend, the lovely Joe Vecchio, on the Cup of Joe Radio Show.
Hey, And we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And one of the things Phyllis and I were talking about in the car today as we were finishing up and, you know, going home, was about being a radio show host and what it means to be a radio show host. But I got a letter, and I got to read the whole thing. It was from someone who claimed to be a soldier, and I'm not saying he's not telling the truth, but it sounded sincere enough, and it wasn't, you know, a nasty gram addressed to me, because, you know, when you're on the left, you're accused of being anti-military. And the thing I always say when people accuse me of that, I say, hey, I was in the military. I was a sergeant in the Air Force. I may not have been the best airman in the world, but, you know, I served. And I come from an entire family of people who served in the military. Since World War II, pretty much, my family came through Ellis Island and arrived here in the 20s and such. My father was born in 1921. And my grandfather came here in, like, well, in the teens, I guess. But I've had I've been involved in a family that have had people involved in every single war that we've had since World War II. World War II, Korea, Vietnam. My cousin Chucky was a paratrooper in Vietnam, a combat veteran. So, but I got an email from a guy, you know, talking about how much he likes the show, and I really, really appreciate that, because you know what? I don't have a lot of education. And he compared my show to people on Air America. He said he liked listening to my show, and on Air America he liked Mike Malloy and Sam Cedar. And I like Mike. I used to work for Mike actually many years ago in a different occupation. It was after he was working here on WSB here in Atlanta. And it was before he moved to Chicago. And he used to work for what was that group? It was a union who was paying for it. But he's with Air America now, and that's really, really nice that they gave him, because he's a veteran. He's been around for a long time. But really the difference between me and a lot of the other guys is that they all have college educations and have always made a lot of money. I've never made a lot of money. And I think being a radio show host, I think the most important thing is just have the balls to get up there and speak into the microphone in the first place. If you can do that, that's half of your battle won right there. Yeah, if you want to be like a radio DJ, you really have to know how to handle all the tapes and stuff like that. And you do have to do a lot of events. I mean, if you're a professional radio person, you have to go to events and, you know, do publicity and stuff like that, which is actually fine. I like a little structure, and I like a situation where someone else is setting some structure. My show gets really bad here, I think, when I just ramble on without having anything in particular to talk about, kind of like what I'm doing now. but yeah, it's really nice to have a little bit more structure in what's going on. And actually, I'm kind of envious of professional radio show hosts, because they don't have to try to fill 30 or 40 minutes worth of space. Usually, if you listen to a radio show, they're talking for 9 or 10 minutes, if that much, and then go into a commercial for 3 or 4 minutes. Last show, the one with Phyllis and I, we went nonstop for almost an hour. And there are times when I get on a roll where I can speak for 45 minutes on a subject without stopping. And people have listened to that and go, holy crap, listen to that guy. He never stops talking. He's incredible. And I can do that from time to time. But, you know, it would be nice if I can, you know, if I had a commercial break and can rush in. People say, well, why don't you have more stuff? And, well, you know, doing the other stuff takes more time. I can fill time this way much easier. Much easier. But anyway, back to the letter. And the guy was saying, you know, he's a service member, and he sees how the propaganda is separating the white soldiers and the black soldiers. And again, there's such a lot of racial issues that we have in this country. For a long time, though, the military had been very, very good at that. At least it was like that when I was in, certainly. I don't know if things have changed or not. But, you know, Republicans always talking about supporting the troops, yet they never really do anything to actually support the troops. It's all words. It's all meaningless. You know, they're BS artists. They're just saying whatever they're saying because they know that's what their audience wants to hear. But they really don't mean it. I mean, it's obvious that they're not, you know, just first of all, by lying to get us into the war in the first place and put the soldiers in harm's way. That's one way you're not supporting the troops. Another way is to not give them the weapons and equipment that they need in order to fight the damn thing. And the liberal hawks always talk about, oh, it would have been really wonderful if they'd had competent leadership. You know what? It really doesn't matter. You were still wrong for going in the war to begin with. You know, it's just plain wrong. And I don't understand why more people don't see that. I'm glad this guy does. He didn't give a name, and that's good because you don't want to get in trouble. And I always, of course, encourage any soldier to follow the orders, because that's what you're sworn to do, follow the orders of the officers appointed above you. But to just watch what you do and be careful when it comes to refusing to do an order, because that can get you in a lot of trouble. Technically speaking, you're not supposed to follow an illegal order, but that line has always, always been very, very gray. And it's always been very difficult. And, you know, you're really up shit creek if you do the wrong thing, if it was determined that it was a legal order. And, of course, you have to have that kind of discipline. I mean, I hate to say it, but as a soldier, you understand that there were times where you just have to keep your mouth shut and do what you're told. You don't always know what's going on. You don't always have the chance to go know what's going on. And it all comes down to trust. Do you trust the officers above you? Do you trust their leadership? Do you trust the civilian leadership? That's above and beyond everything. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. And when you lose that trust, it makes things very, very difficult. And the right wing has really done very bad by our soldiers, not to mention very bad by the Iraqi people and to America's status in the world. You know, it took us 40 or 50 years to build up the reputation that we had, and that reputation can be destroyed in a heartbeat. And it's going to take a long time for us to get that reputation back again, because we got a group of people in charge who don't care about the law, who only care about their own personal gain or the gain for their ideology, although their ideology is basically give me all your money and give me all your power or we'll take it from you either way. As long as they got it, they don't care. And it's all very, very short term, and it's infected. It's been infecting business. I mean, that's the way some business been to run everything anyway. Everything's got to be what's the next quarter's profits, you know, instead of what are we thinking 5 or 10 years down the road. Now that, and again, I pointed out that's a big difference between progressives and conservatives in that sense, is that progressives are looking 50 years into the future. Conservatives are looking 50 years into the past. The hardcore conservatives think that, you know, the Constitution was just perfect as written in 1789, as approved in 1789, and we shouldn't change at all, which I think is just horseshit. Technology changes. Things change. You know? You can't just do things the same old way. People who do things the same way and fail and still do it expecting different results, that's one of the definitions of insanity. I first heard that Bill Clinton said that. Of course, other people said it long before he did. But my point, and I don't know if I have one or not, but my point is that conservatives always make this big thing about how, you know, they're really acting in everybody's best interest. But the truth is they're acting in their own best interest. And it's all about them, and it's always been about them. Okay, I'm going to have to cut this short. Once again, I want to thank everyone who helped out. And now that I've got a show done and the regular show underneath, and I'm going to try to get a little more active posting, a little more active getting these shows out, because I need to get back in a groove and I need to get my life back together again. True, it's only been 3 weeks, but I'm ready to move on. My wife will always live within me, you know, inside of me in spirit, and like that. And I'm very sad she's gone, but life must go on, and that's what I'm going to do. So, again, thanks to everybody for listening in. Thanks to Ben Birch and the White Rose Society, and to every all of my fans out there listening, thanks again. I'll be back next time. Bye.
I want a cup of Joe. I'll crave a plate of Dave. Open a jar of John. Don't put anything on. I'll chug a jug of George. I'll sip a mug of Doug with the creamer of Steve. How many more does that leave? You be a pot of Scott. Heat up a pan of Stan. Throw in a handful of Sam, but don't give me no mo, 'cause what I really want's a cup of Joe.
The Cup of Joe radio show has been recorded live at the fabulous Studio Al in Decatur, Georgia, and has been produced by Jove Enterprises Incorporated. J Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe radio show, is a production of Mr. and Mrs. Vecchio of Brooklyn, New York.
A plate of Dave, creamer of Steve, a mug of Doug, a cup of...